408. Rog Taylor and Michael taking you home this afternoon. 51 degrees on the outside. A warmer day tomorrow, a high near 60. If you'll recall, Bob Larson promised us this last week. He said there would be yet one more 60-degree day, and it appears Wednesday is the day that might happen. And the other, at least we're not getting the snow that we are off to the northwest. A few weeks ago, I read an article that stuck with me, and it talked about food insecurity in children having lifetime impacts on that child, something they carried with them the rest of their life. And that's why this study that was released today, pointing that we need to be investing in children, and we need a cohesive system to develop the mental ability of children prior to their being 8 years old. That dovetailed with the article I had read about the impact of food insecurity, and that's why we're talking with Jane Zender from Kids Count in Michigan. And good afternoon, Jane. Oops, one more button. There we go. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Roger.
And I was, I think you may have heard, explaining to people why this stuck with me because of the article I read a couple of weeks ago. Why is the birth to 8 years old, why is that age so critical for young children?
Well, we know now from all the brain imaging that the architecture of the brain develops very rapidly in those early years. And what we can do in those early years will have lifetime consequences, for good or for bad. And we know what makes for successful learning. And we know that when families lack basic resources, like enough money to buy food or get access to nutritional food for their kids, kids suffer. And what we are looking at in this report is what happened over time to a group of kindergartners and what the outcomes were when they reached the third grade. And what's disturbing about this report is that on every aspect of child well-being, kids and families that had income below double the poverty level, which is how low income was defined in this report, performed far below their more affluent peers all areas. Their health wasn't as good. They were less likely to be engaged in school. Their social-emotional development was lagging compared to the higher income. And the definitive issue was their academic or cognitive achievement as measured by the reading test at the third grade level.
Mm-hmm. And the report we're talking about was issued by the Anne E. Casey Foundation, and the title is The First 8 Years Giving Kids a Foundation of Lifetime Success. Talk to me a little about what you found with Michigan kids and how they compare nationally.
Well, similar to the nation, Michigan, about half of the children in this age cohort, 0 to 8 years old, are living in families with income below double the poverty level. And we know that in this day and age, that level of income does not allow parents to provide for all the basic needs of their children. So we have a substantial number of children who are in danger. And one of the most important things that we can do, according to the report, is make sure that we provide supports for families. And we're looking at a particularly difficult time in Michigan. We've had a economic recession that is second in severity only to the Great Depression.
Yeah, and it's gone on for nearly 10 years now.
That's right. And we have a generation of children that is growing up, and we only get one chance at childhood. So this generation, and yet we're wanting this generation that's coming up to not only survive the K-12 system with the skills and aptitudes that they need to do that, but we need to have more of them be successful post-secondary training and education to take those highly skilled jobs that are part of the new economy.
Mm-hmm.
So at a time when the demands are the most high, that we also have a generation of kids that not only is living through really tough economic times, but they're also living in an era where the programs and benefits that used to help people weather hard economic times have either been restrained or eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
So families are struggling.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There were a couple of other areas that were identified as areas that should be focused on: increasing access to high quality birth through age 8 programs,
mm-hmm.
Targeted at low income children, and developing comprehensive integrated programs to address child development and support their transition from preschool into school and on.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things cost a lot of money, Jane. And we're in an era where the Republicans who control our state government are cutting aid to education.
Yes.
Where conservatives in Washington, in the case of just this past Friday, sat on their hands and watched the SNAP program or food stamps mm-hmm. Be decreased.
Yes.
And they're talking about further decreases.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I can appreciate what you're getting at here, but what's the chances of this ever happening in our state or in our country?
Well, we do have, on the positive side, Roger, we do have some initiatives in Michigan that are going in the right direction. We're focusing on reducing infant mortality and unhealthy births, which means fewer babies being born at low birth weight or preterm,
mm-hmm.
which elevates the risk of having developmental delays.
Mm-hmm.
We're expanding and coordinating home visiting programs. We're getting a lot of federal money through the Affordable Care Act to do that, and we're targeting that money in high-risk areas. We've developed this Great Start collaborative effort at the local level, and we've created the Office of Great Start at the Department of Education. All of these are very positive trends. Where Michigan really is compromising the future of children is this reduction in economic supports and also the foot dragging over the Medicaid expansion,
mm-hmm.
because children cannot be healthy if their parents are compromised. The people who are taking care of our kids need to have the best possible access to health care. We know that a lot of low-income parents suffer from depression. They also are more likely to suffer from chronic health problems. So the Medicaid expansion could mean a lot in terms of child well-being. So the fact that it has, in fact, gone forward, we've got some glitches to work out, but this could be a huge improvement in child well-being to see some of these things put in place. We're extremely concerned right now about a bill in the House that's proposing to retain any third grader who doesn't pass the reading test
mm-hmm.
in the third grade. We think that, you know, that it harms kids. We know from multiple research studies that it has a very bad impact on kids in terms of their engagement in school and ultimately whether they stay in school through high school.
Being kept back.
Being kept back in the third grade. And
okay.
This would affect, right now, under the current outcomes, it would affect a third of the third graders. That's 35,000 kids. And it would be disproportionate, of course, in low-income communities where kids have less resources and don't do as well on these standardized tests. And it would vastly increase costs because if you hold a child back, they spend an extra year in the K-12 system, and the bill really doesn't speak to how long they would be held back on 1 year, 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
So we end up punishing kids for our own failures to intervene with programs that we know work at younger ages. We can't wait until the third grade and then hold a kid back.
But can we keep, if children can't read, can we keep moving them through the educational system when inability to read keeps you from really learning well in any subject area?
Absolutely. That's a very good point. What we can do is put on the ground a lot more programming around reading specialists, around small class sizes, around there's multiple interventions that we can do, tutoring to bring kids up to grade level, but we don't need to hold them back in order to do that. Holding back a child at grade level for reading, they may be very good at math and science. We're going to hold them back. It becomes very complicated very quickly. So by putting in interventions, and that's what some states have done that have put this in place. They've put another 100 or 200 million into interventions to help kids be able to read. But we're not doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly we can do that. We could be making these interventions at a younger age so that kids wouldn't have to suffer the consequences of not being able to read by the time they're in the third grade.
Yeah. Yeah. We're talking with Jane Zender from Kids Count in Michigan, and you brought up the Office of Great Start that Governor Snyder created, and you mentioned that as a bright spot. What exactly is that program accomplishing, and does it have the resources it needs to really be effective?
Well, it certainly is bringing into one place some of these multiple programs that have an impact on early childhood, such as child care, the quality of early child care. It also would oversee the child care subsidy. It's looking at preschool issues, and they're also trying to integrate the health component into the Office of Great Start. So it's taking a more comprehensive view of what kids need in order to succeed. I think the model that we want to look at is the Head Start. I mean, when we started the war on poverty in the 1960s, it's interesting that one of the first programs was Head Start, which is a comprehensive model, including parent education and involvement, mental health, physical health, and making sure that kids get access to services once they've gotten some assessments about what might be some of the problems that they're facing. And that's sort of one of the issues around the expansion of the Great Start program that the legislature recently funded, this $65 million, which will enable more children to go to preschool, but the state-funded preschool has nowhere near the comprehensive programming that Head Start has.
So it's better than nothing, but Head Start would have been a preferred delivery system.
Well, for those kids that are eligible, and unfortunately, the federal budget cuts have had an impact on Head Start.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate your taking time to chat with us this afternoon.
My pleasure, Roger.
We've been talking with Jane Zender. Jane, before I let you go, if people would like to learn more about Kids Count in Michigan and the Michigan League for Public Policy, how would they do that?
They could go to the website, www.mlpp.org.
That would be a good thing to do. I appreciate your taking time to chat with us.
Thank you, Roger.
You have a good one.
You too.
Jane Zender, the director of Kids Count in Michigan. And this study that came out, as I mentioned earlier, jived with what I had read several weeks ago, just that living in an environment that is food insecure has lasting impacts on children. And there's a lot we can do to help make children viable adults. And a real downside, it seems, if we choose to do nothing or we continue to cut programs. Earlier this afternoon, I mentioned going to see Ender's Game over the weekend, and I enjoyed the movie, and I enjoyed it so much that I'm going to give a pair of tickets to see it in the IMAX at Celebration Theaters. You be caller number 7. That's caller number 7 at 382-4280-877-382-4280. And you can go see Ender's Game free from your friends here at 590 WKZO and the Celebration Cinema adjacent to Crossroads. .37 at 590 WKZO. Roger and Michael accompanying you home this afternoon. And the weather is brought to you by Asthma and Allergy Centers of Southwest Michigan. For the office nearest you, visit asthmaallergycenters.com. Clouds and some breaks of sun this afternoon, brisk and chilly. Mostly cloudy, breezy tonight, a low of 41. Mostly cloudy and milder tomorrow. We're going to get near 60. And Wednesday, periods of rain and a high of 57. So we're getting the near 60-degree temperatures that Bob Larson promised us over a week ago. That's why we call it AccuWeather, folks. And joining me now, where they get a lot more snow than we do, but she somehow survives it, is Nancy Warren from Wolf Watcher. Nancy, how are you this afternoon?
Roger, I'm doing just fine.
You got any snow on the ground?
It's all gone.
Ah, okay, good.
But we're supposed to get more, so.
Yeah. I mentioned, talked to a friend in Minneapolis this morning, and they've got their first winter storm watch for Wednesday. So that may be when you get a little something.
I don't know if we're under a snow watch. I've been so busy reading posts, I haven't paid too much attention to what the weather's going to be.
Well, and we didn't arrange our conversation to talk about the weather. Over the weekend, news is coming out about the justification that was used to create a wolf killing season.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that a big chain of newspapers came to you to talk about this. And so fill us in. What new information is coming to light?
Not even sure where to begin. It's happened all so fast.
Yeah.
Actually, what happened was we had an investigative reporter from Michigan Live who came up to the UP and not only interviewed me, but he interviewed John Kosky, the DNR. He did what we really consider true investigative reporter. And, of course, I gave him all the data that I had, information about depredations. He did his own investigation, though, and he told me that right up front that, he, as a reporter, he's required to verify the information, and that's what he did. But he also found out that everything that I furnished to him and everything I gave him was true, that this one particular farmer in my county, which is only about 10 miles from me, 10, 11 miles from me, is responsible for most of the depredation. He went out to the farm and found himself, this reporter, in going out there, found a dead cow in one of the outbuildings that had obviously been there for a while. That's a violation of Michigan law. He also found other violations. Now, this is a reporter who didn't even realize some of these things were violations. So he's uncovered a whole wealth of information. He found that, as you know, that if a wolf does cause a problem on a farm, a producer is given a permit to kill any wolf on that farm. And this gentleman who we're referring to did have permits to kill wolves. And he openly tells this reporter that here are the deer parts that they were using to bait in the wolves to kill the wolves. That's against the law. So here I have the guidelines that say lethal control when we're going to issue a permit, and it very clearly says that you cannot bait the wolves in. And so, but that's what they were doing. So it's going to be interesting. I'm sure there's a few people who might be a little bit uncomfortable with these stories that are coming out.
Senator Casperson?
That's just one story. The other story is our state senator, Senator Casperson. This was about 2 years ago, just before all this started with a hunt. He introduced a resolution into the state Senate, and as part of the resolution, now again, from a lawmaker standpoint of view, he's presenting this to a committee, he's presenting it to the full Senate, they're going to take his word. He's a trusted member of the Senate. So in his resolution, he put forth a statement about wolves being killed in the yard of a daycare center shortly after the kids were let out for recess, and just brought up this whole fear factor issue about the incident in a daycare center. As soon as I saw that resolution, I immediately went to the DNR and said, what is going on here? I'd never heard of this incident. And we tracked it down, and sure enough, the incident didn't occur. I had then contacted Senator Casperson and then Representative Matt Hookey, gave them the information, said this was not true, this did not happen, and we tracked it down. And again, we go full circle here because we found the author of this resolution was our local judge. And it gets worse from here. The local judge is also a shooter on this farm. So he's authorized to kill wolves on this farm that's having this depredation problem.
Hmm.
So if I haven't lost you by now,
no.
We have a state senator who is friends with the judge, who is friends with the farm producer. And they were all in all came up with a story about this daycare center, which turned out to be not true. Even when presented with the facts, he still pushed forward with the resolution. which, okay, we couldn't do too much about that. They passed it and it went all the way through. Well, now what it turns out is now that this has all been exposed in the newspaper, Senator Casperson has said publicly, and now this has been published in at least 6 or 8 newspapers in Michigan that I know of for sure.
The Kalamazoo Gazette, one of those papers.
Yeah, the Gazette is one. The Grand Rapids Press is another. The Detroit area papers, the Ann Arbor paper. So this has been, and I'm sure it's going to be picked up by other papers as well. But he has now said that he didn't know it wasn't true.
Even though you had told him.
Even though we told him it wasn't true. And now he says he will recant it. So now we're trying to apply some pressure to him. And, of course, he's not in his office today. And no one in his office seems to know about this. But he has said that he will recant the story. So he'll also have to recant a few other things that he told that were misleading, like the fact that 9 dogs were killed when they weren't. So he has a long list of recanting to do. So that's going to be interesting to see how that happens. But then another little key point that was, and I think we talked about this earlier in the year, where one of the DNR officials put forth some information that also proved not to be true. He made a comment to Michigan Public Radio that was aired all over the Detroit area and in southwest Michigan, too, that the reason this hunt is needed was because we have wolves showing up in people's backyards and people pounding on doors at wolves that showed no fear. Well, again, as soon as I saw that post or that heard the interview, and I heard it, I heard the actual interview, so it wasn't like he could say, oh, I was misquoted in the paper or something like that. It's his actual recording, and it's still online available of him saying this. I, again, issued a Freedom of Information request, and I asked for a copy of the incident report and found out there was no such report. Well, this particular reporter contacted him, and he has now admitted that he misspoke. So what we're having is this whole foundation for this wolf hunt is based on misleading and false information, the very thing that we talked about 8 months ago.
Exactly. This is not new news for those of us who have been concerned about endangered species in Michigan.
Exactly. When here, we talked about this months ago, where we said how so much of this information is misleading. It's based on hatred and fear and not science. And now, finally, it's starting to come to light. And you know, some people have already said to me, well, now it's too late. It's too little, too late. And I said, no, it's not too late. Maybe we can't stop the wolf hunt, but we still have the power to vote to change the law to make sure that we don't have another hunting season.
Well, and to make sure this kind of irresponsible behavior on the part of elected officials and DNR officials
and I do
won't happen again.
Strong point here, too, that when we say DNR, we're talking about the higher heads. The local, on-the-ground DNR biologists have always been truthful, forthcoming, provided all the information to make sound decisions.
Well,
these decisions are coming out of Lansing.
Those folks, the folks out there in the field, understand the concept of science and giving things a reasonableness test when you hear a fanciful story that couldn't be true or certainly makes you wonder if it could be true.
Right.
And you're right, the people out there in the real world know the real world.
And so, when we say DNR, we're talking the political appointees within the DNR and we can't help but say, now look, how many people within the DNR knew what the information in this resolution was wrong? I found it out by one phone call.
Mm-hmm.
You know darn well that people within the DNR knew, if no other reason, the fact that I was calling to find out if it was true. So somewhere along the line, that information was squelched within the DNR. Why wasn't DNR going to the representatives, going to these committees and saying, look, you guys want to pass a resolution, that's up to you to pass a resolution, but use facts. Here are the facts.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
failed to do that. The legislatures turned a blind eye to it. This whole thing, it's now starting to show that it's just all been manufactured to push forth their agenda.
Mm-hmm. Is there any chance that a judge might intervene and prevent the hunting season this year? Is there
Probably
any talk
not.
Of going to court? Okay.
Probably not. I really doubt that it's going to be a way of actually stopping it. We're not giving up. I do know that many people are reading these statements. Many people are reading this. Many people are aghast by it. I do know the tribal interests are very upset with this hunt, and I know they are pushing to try and have negotiations on this, because this has been their claim as well, that this has been based on misinformation, misleading information, and outright lies. And so this might just be the push that we need to be able to move forward, maybe with the tribes being able to put a halt to this hunt. I know there's been talk of possibly trying to petition the governor to stop this hunt because of all this false information. It's based on lies and based on false information. So we're not totally giving up, but realistically, we probably are not going to be able to stop it.
Yeah. So there's a large number of wolves going to be killed for no reason, really.
43 wolves are their target, 19 in the area where I live, 16 a little bit west of here in Gogeba County, and 8 over on the eastern end.
Okay.
So, yeah, there will be some wolves being killed. And if you're following the stories as well, Rolf Peterson does have a great editorial also posted in the paper as to why he does not support the hunt. So, check it out in the Kalamazoo Gazette. It's on live. And now tomorrow there will also be another story. He has at least one more story planned. And ironically, now that these stories have all been hit in the newspaper, we are now hearing from a reporter up in the Upper Peninsula here now who wants to do another story. So I think this has the potential to be really big in exposing all this information.
Well, and it certainly should make us question a lot of the information we hear coming out of Lansing.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a good example of responsible governance.
Right. And as I told the reporter, when I talked with the reporter from Michigan Live, I said, you know, we are all adults here. We can have reasonable discussions, but let's all have discussions using the facts.
Yeah.
And that is what's missing from this whole equation.
Yeah.
Sitting down as a member of the Michigan Wolf Advisory Team and the committee, we were never given all the facts either to discuss.
Right.
We were told this is what's going to happen. What are your concerns? We never sat down and said, look, here's an area of a farm. This is a farm that we have tried this, this, and this at, because we do have a couple of farms that have been hit rather hard, and they have done everything possible, you know, good to prevent depredation, and non-lethal wasn't working. And if they would have set a small bullseye and said, okay, we need to have a 5-mile radius or a 10-mile radius and reduce the wolf population because of all the depredations at this particular farm, at least we can start with concrete facts.
Yeah.
The problem is the groups that are pushing for this hunting season would not be satisfied with just five or six animals being taken out of a core area.
Right.
And that's where the problem is. And it's the hunting lobbyists that have got all the clout in Lansing.
Yeah, and they've certainly got Senator Casperson's ear.
Right. They have Senator Casperson on their side, and at the time, Matt Hookey, who was our state representative, and who just keeps propagating this misinformation. So it'll be interesting to see over the next couple of days what happens on this, if anything changes.
Oh, yeah. How would people, if they want to stay abreast of all of this, what's the best place to go?
Well, we haven't even had time to get everything posted to our website right now. So right now, probably the best place to get it from is Facebook. It's happening so fast. Facebook has got a lot of postings at the Wolf Watcher Facebook site, plus everybody is cross-checking it. Also, www.mlive.com has got all his stories on there.
Okay.
As well as all the postings on there as to what's happening. So he's going to have at least two more stories over the next 2 days.
Thanks, Nancy.
Okay, thank you. And then as we're speaking, I'm just looking here. Special weather statement issued for us for tomorrow night. Measurable snow expected Tuesday night into Wednesday.
Ta-da! It starts. You have a good one, Nancy.
You too. Thanks a lot.
Nancy Warren from Wolf Watcher. And what many of us have suspected all along, that the wolf hunt in Michigan is based on a tissue of lies. Getting the snow, my friend in Minneapolis is, or our friend Nancy Warren in the Marquette area is. But we're going to see some rain, but a couple of mild days to get there. And mostly cloudy and breezy tonight, 41 the low, cloudy and mild tomorrow, a high near 60. And Wednesday, mild again and periods of rain. We're down to 50 degrees in Kalamazoo. That's going to do it for Michael and I. You have yourself a safe trip home, an enjoyable evening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow at 3.
Kalamazoo's news, weather, and traffic station is 590 WKZO. Kalamazoo.